23 years ago, I wrote an adaptation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein for the theater where I used to work, the late lamented American Stage Festival in Milford, New Hampshire. And my old friend Rob Richards played the creature. Now, Rob is directing the second production of my adaptation of Frankenstein. And Rob, all I can say is, thank you for giving my creation life!
God help me.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 360, Austin Titchener's Frankenstein. Yes, as spooky and chilling as it sounds, my stage adaptation of Frankenstein has come back to life thanks to my old friend Rob Richards, the drama, film, and acting instructor at Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire, who is directing the script's second production just in time for Halloween. It's not a comic adaptation, as I hope will become clear, mostly because I wanted to stay true to Mary Shelley's novel, but also because young Frankenstein and Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein already exist, and as far as I'm concerned, they cannot be improved upon. I was privileged to visit Exeter recently to watch a few rehearsals, and while I was there, Rob and I talked about my adaptation and the challenges and the opportunities of making the thing work for the stage. So you're directing it here with teenagers, and that was one of the first conversations we had about the script, is that are teenagers going to get the themes that are going on in this book, in this play? And my theory was, I think teenagers are the perfect age, because only American teenagers feel with the intensity of 19th century romantic poets, which is who Mary Shelley and her whole crowd were. That was my theory. Has that proven to be the case? Does your cast feel as intensely as they should?
Well, the great thing, as you've pointed out, about the students, the kids, the actors at PEA, is they are all so smart. Yeah. And therefore capable, and they get it. And that's one of the greatest things about working with them. And in fact, you know, the job, the best thing about the job is the students by far. Mm-hmm. And seeing that, oh my gosh, look at them go, because they figure it out eventually. But yeah, we're at the rough stage now where it's just sort of feeling things, and you know, I think they're in their heads a lot and trying to get it right rather than letting the banshees go.
Right, right.
I've got the faith, and yeah. and they'll pull off something anyway.
Well, and you've had me here to work. You've had both me and Dee here before in years past to work with the students here, and they are, as you say, really, really fun group and a really smart group, but they are also, as a sweeping generalization, a very polite, mm-hmm. well-behaved group of young actors. And yes, I mean that in the bad way.
Yes,
you know, you want them to kind of be a little more unruly.
Yes,
be bolder, perhaps, not afraid to
take some frigging risks
and piss some people off.
Yes, and yeah. Be rude and be bawdy, yeah. and piss people off, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I said that I don't feel bad about saying that in public with the microphone, because I said that to them in rehearsal today. But what intrigued you about wanting to do, I mean, first of all, thank you for doing my play, but also what intrigued you about it? I mean, it's a mammoth production, as you're discovering every day. What was it? You had played the creature before. The original production was done in 2 weeks, summer stock, so there was not enough rehearsal time. There never is, but there was really not that time. What made you want to tackle it again, but this time in the director's chair?
One thing certainly was the bromance that we have. I think, you know,
that you and I have. Yes.
Yes.
Right. Right.
There. Even though we sort of threw that thing together, and I remember shaking my head, scratching my head when we did that show, 23 years ago, was it?
Yeah.
I remember having good feelings about it, and for me as an actor, I got a lot out of it. But I think reading the script. First time I went back to it, it was like, God, this thing, you fly through the script when you read it. It's like, wow, it moves. And I read the novel again this summer, which I really liked. And then I went back to the script and I thought, oh my God, this really is pretty damn good. And I want to, it's a horror show, it's Frankenstein, but it's the novel, the English department will dig it and they're mm-hmm. going to teach it. So it's got the whole literary thing and maybe, in part I'm sort of a Mary Shelley fan knowing that, discovering or rediscovering that she was 19 when she wrote it, and you pointed out that they were kids, Yeah.
Victor Frankenstein, when the book starts, is 17.
Yeah.
So they're at best they're in their early 20s. I mean, so not only was Mary Shelley a teenager, but the characters in the book are really teenagers. And that was, I mean, when we sat down to write it, you said, "How do you write this thing?" I remember approaching it. Because when you read Frankenstein for the first time expecting a horror show, it's one of the great disappointments in life. Because it's not. She didn't write a horror show as we understand it now in the late 20th, early 21st century. So my goal in writing the adaptation was to capture the ideas that are in her novel and the themes that are still continue to resonate, but put in some of the scares one expects from a thing called Frankenstein. So my approach was to make it George Bernard Shaw meets Stephen King, full of intellectual debate about whatever the issues at hand are, but also full of boogie boogie boogie, moments of scaring.
Yeah, which is very, I mean, the Shaw stuff is all you, because that's, a whole lot smarter than I will ever hope to be. But the Stephen King stuff, I certainly love. Yeah. I love that. I mean, what I think is also in this story is the tragedy. And I can remember, it's so upsetting because the guy just keeps moving forward and making these choices it's no surprise that it was written by a woman about a guy who makes a lot of choices that are, self-indulgent or misguided and a lot of bad consequences. And I think that's a good message because, my God, I mean, we've been doing it for a few years now, a few centuries to, screw things up and have the sort of male all-knowingness that is really not good, put us in a good place in all kinds of ways. The planet, for instance.
Well, and in rereading the novel myself, because I had to reread the adaptation and kind of go, does this hold up? And I felt it did. And I reread the novel, and 23 years ago, it was the sort of medical ethics. They were beginning to talk about cloning, and they were beginning to talk about right to end-of-life issues and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, as I reread it again, I'm older. The book is now older. There's so many other things going on. There's the oncoming train of 19th century industrial revolution about to hit the natural order of the 17th and 18th centuries. There's also the idea of the Jeffersonian Enlightenment issues, where we can outthink any of our problems, and maybe sometimes we can't. Maybe we have to be more feeling. And if Dee were here, she would be arguing for Mary Shelley as a feminist author from a feminist perspective, which is kind of what you were talking about earlier. There's a lot of different cool stuff going on in the play. I mean, for me also as a parent, it's like, how do we treat our children? And even just several weeks ago, I talked to Kate Powers about her production of Our Town at Sing Sing, and I was reading Frankenstein when I was reading it again. I had that going through my head because Victor Frankenstein decided his creation was a monster and so treated him monstrously, and then the creature behaved like a monster. I mean, I don't want to blame the victim, but I mean, I think we have to look at the reasons monstrous behavior exists. Absolutely. And I think Frankenstein is one of the great myths that allows us to do that.
Hi, this is Mayor Cory Booker of the great city of Newark, New Jersey, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare's Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Well, you just missed the Reduced Shakespeare Company in Asia for a month and Lakewood, Colorado for a night, but you can still see us on our ongoing UK tour of the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised. And starting in 2 weeks, for the next 2 months, you can see us perform the Ultimate Christmas Show abridged across the U.S. and the world premiere of the Complete History of Comedy abridged at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReduceShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with director Rob Richards about Frankenstein's themes, literary allusions, and some inspired casting possibilities.
The father-son thing is what's so... It's very poignant, very powerful, and it's pretty heart-rending. And when you have a character that has the Stephen King killer instinct at times, mm-hmm. and all that vehemence, but then when he says those final lines about just, you know, I just wanted you to love me, right. just to accept me and not reject me or not tell me that I'm, you know, not what you wanted me to be.
Right.
It strikes some chords.
I tried to be sort of explicit or possibly too meta in the adaptation to include the literary references that Shelley either uses or alludes to. And so there's a lot of Caliban in there. There's a little bit of Prometheus. There's John Milton. There's certainly a lot of Shakespeare, and because I think that's in the book, but I also think that adds to the fun of the adaptation.
Yep.
I mean, somebody told this when our children were young too, which is that they said, you can't teach your children anything. You can only learn to get to know them. And that's not 100% true, but they do come out the way they come out, and so do these monsters that we create on a laboratory table. You know, the law of unintended consequences. As Jeff Goldblum says with his hands in the air, nature finds a way.
Yeah, there are many different levels that I think are very powerful in the story, and I'm still trying to figure out why, after all this time. When she wrote it in 1816, and mm-hmm. I guess, wasn't mm-hmm. I think, and it still carries weight, and I know just because of the title, people are going to come, and that's exciting.
Right.
And I'm absolutely glad that your script is about, you know, from the novel more so than the 1931 film, which, you know, I enjoyed, and, you know, when I watched it as a kid and cried like a baby, you know, but I think there's a lot of pathos in this that I'm still, even as directing it, I'm wondering, you know, how does the horror and the tragedy sort of dovetail, what is it that holds the audience? And I guess maybe I think it's both,
right?
But and the humor too, because you've certainly got some humor in there.
Well, fingers crossed. And also, you know, laughter and screams are both releases of tension. And hopefully, as you were saying, you know, you want the tension in the play to be like a drum, so, you know, people can scream or laugh to get rid of that tension. That's part of the fun of seeing a play like Frankenstein.
Yeah. 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 And one of the challenges is because you want it to be bigger because it's the circumstances are certainly larger than life,
right.
One would hope, but you want the intensity to be
right.
Not over the top, but you want it to be powerful and engaging. I mean, that's not the right word, but the audience is on the edge of their seat.
Yeah.
And that's and I think, you know, that's a great challenge for kids and for me to work with them and say, hey, that this is what, you know, to dare the audience to not be scared or to not
dare them to laugh and to
stay connected and riveted with this
right.
you know, umbilical cord of, you know, you're going on this and through this with me. And that's the stage where we're sort of at now, I think, is working on the moments so that each moment is a link and a chain, and
right.
we've got these, and I'm bringing in a lot of old rusty chains, but we got to have those moments really flushed out and fully, you know, experience, realize, whatever you want to call it, so that they're honest.
Yeah.
But that's a dance, because you want it to be big, but not phony, obviously.
Well, and I love the designs that I've seen so far of the work you're doing with your designers of mashing together the the chains and the metal of the oncoming Industrial Revolution with the natural wood of the and the living things of the earlier 17th, 18th century. I'm calling this week's podcast Austin Titchener's Frankenstein because I know that sounds aggrandizing, if I'm saying that word right, but it's also a joke because when we were casting, the very first, you know, back in 1990 when I was at American Stage Festival, because we were a small regional theater, five of us were doing the work of, you know, 20. 25, right? So in addition to being the associate producing director and writing an adaptation of Frankenstein and directing Cyrano de Bergerac, I was also the casting director and the marketing director and a handful of other things. So I was in charge of casting or setting up auditions and talking to agents. And so I got a phone call once from an agent who said, yes, I just read your breakdowns for Frankenstein and I would love to talk to you about my client, John Whittaker. I went, oh, that's terrific. What's he done? Well, John Whittaker, obviously, you know, he was, you know, a big TV star for. And I went, wait, Johnny Whittaker from Family Affair? He played the little boy in Family Affair, that sitcom in the 60s with Brian Keith and Sebastian Cabot. Yeah. And he went, yeah, that's it. Johnny Whittaker. But he goes by John now. I went, oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah, I would love to see him read. He said, well, he wouldn't read. He'd want an offer. And it, well, I said, well, I don't think we can just offer it, you know. And he said, plus we'd have to talk about money. I said, well, that's an easy conversation because the money is, it's favored nations, it's $325 a week. This was, you know, 23 years ago. $325, everybody gets the same. And he said, well, yeah, well, that wouldn't happen. And his name would have to be above the title. And it was like, so Johnny Whittaker. Is Frankenstein? John Whittaker as Frankenstein? John Whittaker's Frankenstein. You loved him in Family Affair. You'll love him as the mad scientist or his creature. I said I'm sorry, but I loved him as a kid, but I it just sounds like this is not going to be a good fit.
But the Family Affair theme might have worked well for that show.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I probably squandered something very special.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Now, not only is My Frankenstein getting another production, I am very happy to say it is going to be published, maybe even by the time you hear this, by Broadway Play Publishing. If you're interested in reading the script, purchasing several copies as gifts, or maybe even producing it yourself, go to the Broadway Play Publishing website, Broadway Play Pubble, P-U-B-L, BroadwayPlayPubble.com, to inquire about buying copies or licensing the rights. And then send us your literary homages via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel, or best of all, become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, hunchbacked manservant Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout out this week goes to David G. Peckham. Not Beckham, sadly, but Peckham. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Cory Booker, former mayor of Newark and now the newly elected senator of the great Garden State of New Jersey. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 360/1080 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Could have been a cast of John Whittaker as Dr. Victor Frankenstein, Bob Denver as the creature.
Just sit right back in here.
And Jimmy J.J. Walker as the creature.
Oh, my gosh.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.